Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean.
Hi, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
Hey, today's program, we're going to talk about when it makes sense to roll your 401k and when it doesn't make sense to roll your 401k.
And we're going to take a call from a listener that has, actually, I think is a brilliant question, which is, why are there hidden fees in my account when my advisor is supposed to be acting as a fiduciary?
And we'll go through that. Stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for joining us today, both myself and my co-host here. We are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself, helping them plan their financial future, helping them transition to retirement. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you're listening to us live through one of our radio broadcasts or via podcast, we are glad you are with us today and on this journey of helping people make wise choices with their finances.
And we're in year, what year are we in doing this radio? I'm terrible with dates.
Well, I remember because it was we started doing it before my first daughter was born, and she is 22.
All right, so we've been doing the radio show
almost 23 years.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? I just remember the first day I ever did a live radio show broadcast and how nervous. I still remember how nervous I was.
I did too, though. So the first day we did this financial program, Pat, there was a gentleman who called and said, I'm really nervous. He's a caller. I'm really nervous. Sorry, I'm really nervous. I've never been on the radio before. And I remember thinking, buddy, if you think you're nervous, I'm sitting behind the mic sweating.
And we had someone that called in our first show?
Yeah. You don't remember that?
I don't, but I'm
we
just
were
amazed.
We were on Talk 650 outside of Rancho Cordova in Northern California.
I'm just amazed someone called our show the first,
I know.
The first day we were on. But you can call our show.
This
we've
is
got 22
program.
Years of experience. Now, we've taken
unfortunately,
thousands of phone calls.
The experience in the first couple of years, not quite so good.
No.
Not and, joking.
And now you can judge whether we've gotten any better at it or not. But we've taken thousands and thousands of phone calls.
We really have.
And we'd like to take yours.
Yeah. So if you want to join us.
Only if you have a financial question. I don't care how you feel about the administration. I don't care about how you feel about guns. I don't care about any of that. I only want to talk finance.
Yes. You know, it's funny. My mother, she loves talking politics. And I can't stand talking politics, particularly with family. What's the point?
Yeah.
I don't like sitting complaining about anything. I don't like it. And so just
did you have to
this
ask
morning, driving into the studio, she says something, brings up Trump. Mom, can we please not talk about politics? Oh, I know. I don't like talking about politics either. And then she continues on. I'm like,
she's your mother.
I said, I just don't like talking about politics. And she says, well, I can understand in your business, you really don't. And I'm thinking, it's just, she's my mother, but.
You got to talk about what your mother wants to talk about. What kind of a son are you?
I'm a good son.
Talk about what your mother wants to talk about.
Is that how it works? All right. Well, but right
she
now.
She wants to talk about the weather. Talk about the weather.
She likes talking about that too. Always. Every conversation. Mom, we live 30 miles from each other. I think it's fairly similar. Are you getting rain down there? You know. I love my mom dearly.
Your mother's a very nice person. And patient.
And patient. She birthed me. If you'd like to be a part of Hanson McLean, got a call, what a question for us regarding something in your financial life, trying to figure out how to make the most of your finances or figure out if you now's the right time to retire or when you should retire or the right
kind of
allocations.
If you can retire.
Yeah, all those things. So to be part of the program here at Hanson McLean's Money Matters, simply dial 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766, and would love to get you on the air. Let's start off in Boulder, Colorado with Tony. Tony, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning.
Hi, Tony. Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, well, I'm one of probably many, many thousands of federal government employees that's either I just retired last year.
Okay.
And my big question is we have, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, a separate 401k type plan in the government.
Mm-hmm. We're familiar.
Called a thrift.
Yeah, sure.
Thrift savings plan.
A TSP.
Yeah.
Right, right. So, and with my colleagues, a lot of them in the same boat, retiring or and they just get, retired.
And they give you that huge selection to choose from.
Right.
Of what, four or five different funds?
Yeah, and then there's some families they set up, but they're really combinations of those four or five.
Yes, you know, yes. It's which is the strangest thing.
It really is. And on top of that, when you retire, you can make a couple choices. So one good friend, and he really is into this, he's going to take it all out. Because you can take it as one lump sum and roll it over in a regular IRA, and now
right. That's correct.
You operate like everybody else in the country, right?
That's correct.
But they are pushing hard, and what I did when I already made a decision was I took that lump sum and I took 2/3 of it. So I was able, I did okay over my 30-plus years, and I got it right to seven figures last year as I retired.
Okay.
And
congrats.
I took 2/3 of it, thank you, and rolled it into a standard. It's the big company with the V,
uh-huh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But that was a hassle because you got to fill out these forms, and actually they rejected the first time, and I had to refill everything out.
So Tony,
how I was able to do it.
How old are you?
I'm 64.
And why just 2/3?
Well, because they've changed the rules on us now on top of that. So last year, Congress, this is something they passed. They only allowed a one-time lump sum. Well, they changed it, so we're going to be able to make multiple withdrawals.
Yeah.
But it's got one great fund in there that nobody else can touch.
What is it?
It's guaranteed by the federal government. It only pays 2%.
Mm-hmm.
But it's locked in. You know, you will never go down.
Yeah, but I'm going to, I got to tell you.
I know, on 2%.
So that's, yeah. It's
still better. It's cash, but it's a high yielding cash.
Yeah, but Scott, you could buy CDs right now, a 2-year CD that's yielding greater than 2%.
I mean, if it's money you're going to spend in a year, that makes sense. If it's longer than that, then I don't know.
Yeah, but
so what's your question for us?
Well, so it sounds like what should myself and like thousands of other federal employees, should we leave it in that?
So here's what's interesting, Tony. So right now, here's what's happening. Right now, there's going to be some academic that's listening to this call, and if they hear us say that you should transfer it, they're going to cringe. Oh, those horrible financial advisors, because the fees inside of the thrift savings plan are so low.
Yeah.
Right.
And part of it is because they're subsidized by the plan itself.
That's true.
The administration of the plan.
But if you transfer to a large no-load fund and use ETFs, you're going to get the fees about the same as you're going to have in the thrift savings plan. So
similar. Pretty close.
Pretty dang close.
Yeah.
So I think what it really comes down to is not – so if somebody knew exactly what they were doing with the asset allocation – was completely confident in their ability to manage this, not just in the accumulation phase while we're working, saving money, but can manage it in the time that we need to spend the money, make sure it lasts throughout the rest of our life, then clearly you're fine leaving it in the thrift savings plan.
But
that's a small minority of the population. Based on 20-some-odd years of experience watching people and how they react during different times and what they do with their money, that's a small percentage of the population.
Let's just say that you had a choice, that you're not hiring an advisor to help manage this money, that you're going to do it yourself.
Right.
And you can either leave it in the thrift savings plan.
I don't know why you'd leave it in the thrift savings plan.
That was my question. Because you, I assume, in your lifetime have no, until you become infirm and unable to make your own decisions, have no intention of hiring a financial advisor to give you advice on your portfolio. Was that a fair statement?
Well,
no,
yeah,
I'm talking to Scott here. I'm talking to Scott here. Tony, I'm talking to Scott here. Scott, will you ever hire a financial advisor?
No.
Okay. If you were in Tony's situation and you could manage
I've actually been tempted to, just to get an unbiased, because I know I have my own biases and my own
Well, he called the radio show for that.
I get that.
So would you leave the money in the thrift savings plan? You would move it to
absolutely.
You and I know
because I have more than five holdings in my own portfolio.
And I wouldn't even use a single mutual fund complex like you did, Tony. I would use a discount brokerage firm where I had access to different types of investment philosophies.
Okay.
So the first question you have to ask yourself
is... for my personal stuff, I use kind of a hub, and for many of our clients, a hub and spoke, where the vast majority is in index, low-cost funds, but there are still some active managers around the fringe. And we do that for many of our clients. Some of our clients, though, we have all index low-cost funds that prefer that. And
So, Tony, so the first question is, do you want or need the advice, right? And are you willing to pay for it? Many people want the advice. They're just not willing to pay for it. And good advice.
Yeah, I'm close to that camp, exactly.
But you want it, and you may need it, but you're not willing to pay for it.
Or just, again, fairly small fee, you know, if it's for, you know, how much are we talking? That's always going to be the key question.
Right? Yeah, correct. Because you're willing to pay for it if it doesn't cost anything, right? That's what I heard. Or very little, right? So that's a value equation, right? How much value is this or is an advisor going to bring to my life? And am I willing to pay for that? That's an individual decision. So minus that, let's say you're not going to hire an advisor, there's no reason in the world that you should keep your money in that FERS program, the thrift savings plan.
The thrift, right.
Yeah, the thrift saving plan, because you're going to get similar cost and better access to a larger array of investments outside of the thrift savings plan.
And the reason I'm going down this path is I have someone in the family been retired 30 years, and I'm following his example. He's done very well, former government employee as well, and I'm following his example.
Which is fine. I got to tell you, most people that do well in savings, the reason they do well is they keep the dollars fairly aggressively or moderately aggressive invested, and then they don't spend much money.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So people look at him and go, that guy has done a great job investing. Well, there's other people that have done probably a better job investing. They just spend their money.
That's right.
They're spending.
Exactly right.
And I want to spend some. I don't want to just sit around.
Well, then put together a spending plan.
Yeah.
So you've got $1 million.
And a nice pension.
And you're 64 years of age. I assume you have no debt.
And I'm getting a little pension, as you pointed out, about a third of my salary from before. So.
And I assume you have no debt. Is that correct?
One little blip. I made a mistake. I didn't follow. I still have a mortgage, but it's manageable. It's I got like 8-9 years left, and it's $75K.
Not much.
Perfect. Yep.
I think you're doing fine.
You're doing
Tony,
fine.
And I don't see any problem whatsoever with rolling that thing out.
Okay. And you know, because like I said, there's thousands of us. Retired or
but every situation is different, and so the problem is, Tony.
Yeah,
the problem is that if someone gets sold something, a crappy product, or a bad investment advisor gets a hold of that person, they would have been better off leaving it in the thrift savings plan.
That's correct.
So we can't just say always best to,
but based on what we know about. Yeah, we can't make the universal statement. But we're only talking to Tony.
But he was asking for that.
Oh, he was.
At the finish there. And I'm like, we're not going to go there.
Yeah, you can't. Sometimes you're better off leaving the dollars in the plans because there's at least an initial screen for the investments.
Yes. Anyway, appreciate the call, Tony, and wish you well on your retirement. Congrats on that. All right, let's continue on with calls. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're in Denver with Jeff. Jeff, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, thanks for taking my call today.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Thanks for your patience.
I have a couple of questions. One of those might be, I've been working with some advisors, and I was wondering if there was any reason that one advisor had a fiduciary reason to, when he received my money, to buy mutual funds as a fund, a Y fund, or a P fund, and I think those were the designations, as opposed to the investor funds, which seem to have lower costs involved with that.
Good for you.
Investor fund.
Good for you for picking that up.
Yes, he had a fiduciary for that. And he might have disclosed it away somewhere.
What was it, a large firm that this person was connected to?
Yes, it was.
And what was the name of the firm?
It's Edward Jones.
Okay.
And was this a fee-based account where you're paying a fee for your advisor?
Yes.
Okay, so here's us.
And one other question. Are they rebating any of those, what they call 12B1 fees, back to you?
Well, that's what I'm trying to find. That I couldn't find anywhere where it would indicate that they were going to be rebated back to me.
There you go.
So first of all, you didn't pay a load on the A shares. They were bought at what's called a
NAV or net asset value.
So you didn't pay the load that's typically there, but the internal expenses on those funds are more expensive than some of the other classes. So these are, first of all, they're actively managed funds. These aren't index funds, right? That's why there's these different share classes. And it's probably from the firm you mentioned uses a couple different fund families.
Yeah, my guess is it's probably the American funds. Is that correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So here's,
it's almost amazing that we are able to figure this out, isn't it?
So let's kind of take a step back, and here's what happens in parts of our industry. And there's a reason that Pat McClain and myself left a national firm 20-some years ago to be an independent advisory firm. Because a lot of these firms, I'm not going to pick on particularly the one that you'd mentioned because they all have these issues. You understand the way supermarkets work, where like the end caps, Fritos or whatever's displaying there, they pay the supermarket money for that, right? Shelf space.
Right.
They pay extra money. The same thing happens in our industry.
Because quite frankly, many parts of our industry are nothing more than retail establishments that whose job is to move product, much like a grocery store.
So some of these firms, these larger firms, have these deals with some of the product manufacturers that they say, hey, give us some extra money and we're going to give you some prominent placement,
and
just
not,
like at the grocery store.
And we're not saying that the firm that you actually are working with is doing that, but it wouldn't be unusual.
They have in the past. It's been written about.
What? Scott, I was trying to soften this a little bit.
So you don't get hate letters from it. So you don't get in a lawsuit with their...
Correct. Yes, they may or may not be doing this, but it wouldn't be unusual for a firm. So what happens is there's a 12B1 fee, and you saw this. That's why I said good for you to pick this thing up, of 0.25% above what you saw the cost of the institutional shares, correct?
Right.
And so that fee, where's it going? Well,
not to you.
If they refund it to you, then
they're not refunding to them.
It's fine. But most don't refund. Most
and
keep
if so,
it.
Why wouldn't they use the investor class share, Pat, with the lowest fee possible?
So when you pick this up, which is this person really fulfilling their fiduciary obligation? You answer that to me.
Yeah, I don't think so.
There we go.
And as well, I also noticed that the other expense fees were higher, and I was wondering if that actually goes back to the advisor as somewhat of
nope.
a kickback.
Probably not to the advisor.
Probably
but
to the firm. To the firm.
Okay.
And I imagine if you read through the disclosures from the firm, it will state the conflicts of interest that exist, and this would be one of the conflicts of interest.
Right.
A big conflict of interest, in my opinion.
So what it does is that then it puts everything else in kind of a tainted light, right? Because so how could you act as my fiduciary and buy something more expensive
than I could get an open, than you could get for me?
That is clearly available to you, right? And that isn't even an indictment whether this is a good fund or a bad fund. That's just saying that you sent someone to the grocery store to pick up a carton of milk, and there were two identical cartons of milk next to each other, and the person you sent to the grocery store picked up the most expensive one.
Like my son would do, because he doesn't pay attention to those things. But anyway, that's another story.
Yes.
That's a good example.
And that's what you paid someone to go shopping for you, and every time they walk down the aisle, there are two identical things, and they just picked up the most expensive one.
Now, it's more than that, Pat. It's more than that. The person worked for the grocery store.
That's all right. Yep.
And you came in and said, can you get me the milk in the back? And they said, sure, let me go get you the milk and grab the more expensive one.
But they're supposed to,
be working for him is a fiduciary, not for the company. They're supposed to be
working. I don't know.
They're supposed to be working for Jeff.
That's what Jeff thought by hiring this advisor.
Yeah. So, Jeff.
Well, and that's what I thought. And I thought it was kind of obvious that he had purchased some of the funds of each one of those, the A, the Y, and the P, if I'm thinking correctly, as well as the institutional. I mean, he bought all.
So he had, my guess is, he had limits at the company he was with. The company says, you're going to use this share class here, you're going to use this share class there. That's my guess. Okay. Had he been an independent advisor, like Hanson McLean is, like many other good independent advisors are, your account would have been custodied at a different location, like Charles Schwab or TD Ameritrade or Fidelity, Trust Fund of America, independent company. And then they would have chosen the lowest cost options available for you. Because there would be...
Because they would not have restrictions on the amount of each one of those.
They are not trying to serve the corporate overlord. They are trying to serve the client.
Right.
And they would be structured in such a way that they would have no economic incentive to choose anything but the best.
But good for you, Jeff. You should be proud of yourself that you picked it up, because most people never pick it up. That's why they do it. That's why it's
that's
industry
exactly
practice.
Yes.
Because most people never say it. And if you go back to the advisor and the advisor tries to explain it away, you don't have a fiduciary. You got a guy that you think is acting in your best
interest.
He
may want to.
Or she may.
Or she may. But there are restrictions at those big companies.
Uh-huh. So you need to address it. Now, that's your one advisor. Tell us about the other one. Are they doing... Is the other one... Because you mentioned you had two advisors. That's correct?
Well, no. This was just the one advisor, and I was thinking of switching advisors because of this issue.
Yeah, I would.
And one of the other things that I was looking at in terms of switching advisors, it seems like I've gotten two different answers on whether I can avoid capital gains when switching from one advisor to another, because it seems like I have to sell shares.
No. Oh, wait. Well, mostly not. Okay, so I assume these dollars are outside of an IRA, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so mostly not. So let me give you an example. You use a firm like ours. You come in, and the firm you're using does no financial planning for you, correct?
No.
They just invest the assets. And not only do they invest the asset, it might be on the pricey side when you look at the overall cost. Independent firms like myself and many others are financial planning focused with asset management. So what happens is you'd come in and you'd say, we'd offer you financial planning. You said, nah, I don't want any financial planning. I just want to invest the dollars. We would do that as well, but we would offer the financial planning. So here's what we think you should do. We'd do a risk tolerance. We'd actually measure what your portfolio risk is now. And then we would map out what part of the portfolio could come over to be custodied at our firm that wouldn't incur any capital gains. Or we might wash some capital gains against some capital losses, we would map it.
If you have a holding that you've had for years, that a lot of capital gain and it doesn't make sense to sell,
we can almost always bring that over.
And we build a portfolio around it.
The only time you can't do it is if they're proprietary funds, like let's say Ameriprise has a fund. Oftentimes you cannot custody that stuff at other firms.
Right.
But
I know that Ed Jones has a lot of those proprietary funds.
Yeah.
They can't sell over. So one of my questions is, if I have, per se, let's say I've got Microsoft, I have stock in Microsoft, and I want to buy an ETF that has Microsoft in it, along with other positions and other stocks, can the Microsoft be transferred over into that ETF?
No.
No.
Not into the ETF, so but it can be held in your portfolio.
Yeah, you can hold Microsoft in the portfolio and move it straight across. Right. But if you think that I love your thinking, which is I've got a holding.
But the Microsoft is going to be a very small, when you look at it percentage-wise, it's going to be a very small percentage.
Yeah, but the only way you can actually do is if you actually bring those shares over in kind in order to avoid capital gains tax. All righty.
So if I have an ETF in kind transferred over, I will not have a capital gain.
Mostly.
I think we're confusing way to hold things and products. You cannot take any asset you have and stick it inside of an ETF, which is right. ETF is just like a mutual fund.
I think he gets that. You get that, right?
But you can't.
Yeah, I got that.
Okay.
But you can move assets over in kind, which is I've got this mutual fund or ETF that I've owned for years.
Or stock.
Can I house it somewhere else? Almost always you can do that unless it's a proprietary fund.
Yeah.
And if you've got an advisor that tells you you can't, never talk to those person again. They should be able to actually – what happens is sometimes the advisors will say, no, I can't just because it's too much work or they don't want to do it. But you can almost always do it. All righty?
Mm-hmm.
You need to shop for a new advisor, my friend.
Totally agree.
You need a new advisor.
Anyway, it sounds like you didn't have not a good experience. Sorry about that, Jeff. Hey, we need to take a quick break. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit hansonmclean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us as we continue to talk about the world of finance.
And if you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-242-6766.
That's right. And let's go now to...
Or you could always join us on our website at hansonmclean.com.
Let's go to the Bay Area and talk with Paula. Paula, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
I've got a question about whether or not purchasing a home or putting it into an investment. So the situation is my husband and I are both 57. We both work full time. We sold our home about 4 years ago or so and wanted to get back into the real estate market right away, just knowing how crazy.
And you're in the Bay Area, right?
Exactly.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. East Bay. And, but was kind of told at the time, no, things are kind of going to slow down a little bit next year. Well, you know, here we are now, 4 years later, and things have only gone up. We're looking at retiring in about 5 to 7 years. And so we've kept a good chunk of cash ready. At the ready to purchase, but now we've got, you know, this 5 to 7 year time frame where we're probably going to move out of the state. We've got some grandkids in Washington. We've also looked at Arizona. So just looking now, should we continue to rent or, you know, would it be a good investment?
Wow, this is hard, isn't it? That's why you called us.
Yeah,
it was easy. You wouldn't... You would have called it. What are you paying for rent?
About $2,400.
And what would it cost to replace the house? Do you like the place you're renting? Is it okay? Can you live there? Well, obviously, you do live there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not where it's just a townhome apartment. It's, you know, two bedroom, two bath. It's okay, but it's not like, I don't know if I'd want to live here for
how much. If you were to buy that townhome.
Well, shouldn't want to live there. So what would a house cost you? So have you guys looked at houses?
Yeah, we have. And, you know, we're not looking to buy as much of a house as we could. But, you know, we're thinking around just shy of about $1 million would be.
And just for the rest of the listeners, what does $1 million? Mm-hmm. East Bay is actually a very nice community in the Bay Area, I think. A great place to raise a family, a great place to live. Not as expensive as, say, the Silicon Valley, San Jose.
San Jose area.
But what's $1 million get you in East Bay?
A pretty typical 3-bedroom, 2-bath.
1,800 square feet? 2,000?
Yeah,
okay. So here, if you said to us, if you called and said, hey, we are going to live in this house forever. We have family here. We're planning on staying in the Bay Area forever. Our advice would be, get a house because for a couple of reasons. One is you can lock in a long-term mortgage rate today, right? So that way we know exactly what your fixed costs are going to be as you plan for retirement. You're going to be there forever. The challenge in your situation is that if you plan on retiring elsewhere, what you don't want to do, and is why you're calling the show, you don't want to buy a house. I mean, it would be horrible if you spent $1 million in a house in the East Bay, and 7 years from now, when you want to go move to a couple of areas you're thinking about, the prices in the Bay Area have declined, and the prices in the area you want to go to have risen, which is a possibility. Now, nobody has a crystal ball, so we don't know what's going to happen any more than anybody knows what's going to happen. But if we like to look at, whether it's looking at homes or looking at investments, at Hanson McLean, we always like to look at how can we reduce the risk as much as possible to give people the highest probability of success in their retirement.
So tell us how much money you have from the proceeds in the sale of the first home.
It was about $450,000.
And if you moved to Arizona or Washington, would that $450,000 be enough to purchase the home that you want to live in?
Haven't looked as much in Arizona as in Washington.
And Washington's where your family is, right?
What's
a home in Washington? A home you'd like to live in Washington? What would that cost?
We could buy something that would be pretty nice for that amount.
Okay. So my recommendation, I don't know what Scott's thinking, is that I would continue to rent.
And I would buy a home where I think I want to retire now and rent it out.
I think I would probably go with that. Because what you're doing is you're locking in certainty. You know it's going to come to completion.
Well, we don't know. Maybe you buy the home in Seattle. Maybe the home in Seattle prices are depressed by the time you move there. But that's where you plan. If that's where you plan on going, and you're pretty confident because you have family there. Your kids are there. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I've got grandkids there. Yeah.
Okay, grandkids even more so.
And I assume that they're living with your children, but so would the kids move? Your grandchildren, do they have the possibility they're going to move? Because what you don't want to do is move to a particular area. Because you're going there for family, and then family
son,
leaves.
Then son gets some job somewhere else.
Yeah. Are they pretty secure? Are you pretty confident that they will be there?
Yeah, I mean they're young right now. They're 3 and 5. So you know, by the time they get old enough to move away, who knows?
Well, I assume that the grandchildren are living with their parents. Okay, with your son. Okay.
Yes, the parents.
You don't think they're moving?
I'm fairly certain that they'll stay around.
Okay, so
I
agree with Scott.
If it were me and I was in your situation, I would buy a home near there, whether it was $450,000 or I had a small mortgage and five, whatever it is. I would buy that home, something that's going to work with my overall retirement plan. I would buy the home where I was planning on moving and rent it out.
Now, what if we bought a smaller home here in the Bay Area and a place, you know, that would be where we would retire in, it's Vancouver, Washington, so it's not as costly as Seattle.
Yep.
Because we have a pretty good nest egg, I think, for our retirement.
What
we could probably do that.
What size is your nest egg?
We've got about $1 million in cash.
Mm-hmm.
We've got about $1 million in stocks and bonds. We've got about $1.5 million in our retirement accounts.
No, you have done well.
IRAs.
And so you would buy for cash in the Bay Area 7. Would the idea be that you wanted two homes when you retire?
Could be. That would
have
be
you
nice.
Sat with a good financial planner and kind of ran through all this stuff? Because now we're making stuff up, frankly.
Yeah.
Because part of it depends on what kind of income you need to replace in retirement. So I don't know if you have a little or a lot saved.
Everything is relative. And I don't know whether if it's going to achieve the objective or not, because you don't know if you want to live in the Bay Area. Because so far, there's three locations that have come up: Arizona, Washington, and San Francisco Bay Area. And if you said, I want two homes, one in Washington, in Vancouver, another one in Arizona, I'd say, yeah, that's probably doable. But if you said, I want one in Washington and one in the San Francisco Bay Area, it's less doable because of the cost of living in the Bay Area. So now we're just swinging at stuff. But the original question was, you know, should we rent or buy in the Bay Area? The answer is continue to rent and buy a place in Washington where you ultimately want to land. And then your second question was, can I afford to do both? I don't know. I don't know whether $3.5 million is what you said to me is a lot of money or a little money. Because it depends on the income you need off the 300. And everyone's listening saying, $3.5 million? Where'd you grow up, Pat? Well, I grew up where the, you know, the guy with the guy with the new plaid shirt was mayor. It depends, right? Because you're going to use up, if you bought a house in the Bay Area, you're going to use up a million of that.
And how old are you, Paula?
57.
Okay.
I think it would be worth your time for you and your husband to sit with a good certified financial planner and just have these discussions and run through some numbers. That way, you know, it's like maybe you can afford more in the Bay Area right now.
Mm-hmm. But you've got, before you do anything
else. The challenge, though, so what you're looking at, we consider homes long-term investments. We've all seen what can happen, right?
And five to 7 years is not really long term. So you got to decide, you know, if you want to stay in the Bay Area forever, you want a foothold in the Bay Area forever, then I had a similar thing. I had some clients move to Angels Camp, which is significantly less expensive, but they wanted a foothold. They kept a condo for the first 10 years.
Angels Camp, that's like, it's not the end of the world, but you can see it from there.
Well, there's a golf course there. And so they wanted a foothold in the San Francisco Bay Area. So they downsized to a small condo, moved to Angels Camp. And after 7 to 8 years, they got rid of the condo in the Bay Area. They're all doable. It's all doable, whether it makes sense financially or not.
And
for
it
you.
Also depends on what retirement's like. It's like, are you going to cut 100% quit working at a certain date? Or is there a period of phase in or some consulting? I mean, those are all kind of things to consider going through this. But I agree with you. You've been out of the real estate market 4 years.
Don't go back in now.
Well, no, I wasn't going to. In the Bay Area.
For a 5 to 7 year hold.
But you want to get back in for the long term somewhere where you plan to be long term. So
appreciate the call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wish you well, Paula.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, these are some tough decisions. I get it. And hopefully we helped you out somewhat, some things to think about. And by the way, I think you're quite, for the rest of the country listeners, Vancouver, Washington is really a suburb of Portland.
Yeah.
So Washington has no state income taxes and Portland has no sales taxes.
So people live in Washington, drive over the bridge and shop.
Yes. So from a financial planning standpoint, if your goal is to minimize taxes, you can't do much better than Vancouver, Washington.
I spend a lot of time
Although
up there.
You spend a lot of money on umbrellas. As a matter of fact, I take that back. They don't use umbrellas for some reason up in Portland. It's not cool to have umbrellas. It's the strangest place.
What are you talking about?
I'm not kidding. So I have a daughter. My oldest daughter is about to graduate college. She goes to a little school outside of Portland. And I've talked to people who live in Portland. They don't use umbrellas. They wear lots of rain gear.
And they cover their heads. Don't cover their heads.
Plaid shirts and hats. You've been to Portland.
I actually. I like Portland.
You do?
Yeah.
And
you don't like Portland? I like Portland.
I'm sorry. It's not the people. I love the people. Great people in Portland. It's the weather.
I got that. I wouldn't want to live in
Every
Portland.
Every time I go to visit my daughter, she plays lacrosse. It's freezing. It's 42 degrees, raining sideways. It's miserable.
How do you do it?
The only reason people leave there is because the rain's so bad they can't get out long enough to make the drive out of the area.
That's
why there's still population there.
That's why.
Part of the thing at Hanson McLean, we view real estate, someone's personal residence, as a bedrock to a solid retirement plan.
But you consume it. It is not an investment.
Correct. And the bigger the home, all you're doing is taking on more costs, more risk.
More risk, right? You consume your home. You consume your home. If your home was an investment, if your main objective was to have as much money as possible, you would live in the smallest home possible and have a bunch of rentals difference.
Little one-bedroom place.
Yes.
But if you can get to retirement by having a home paid off, for most Americans, their home is their largest expense. We get to retirement age with a home paid off and no mortgage. Suddenly, we've eliminated that largest expense. We don't need quite as much money saved, and the money that come in is much more discretionary, gives us more options. And if we're at retirement and we aren't that luxury, at least if we can lock in a long-term mortgage at a fixed interest rate, a known interest rate, our biggest expense is not subject to inflation. So we're going to transition right now. Instead of taking more calls, we apologize if you were trying to get part of the program, but we are transitioning to our Real Advice segment. And during Real Advice, we talk with a financial advisor of Hanson McLean and hear about a situation that they dealt with. Well, frankly, we try to look for something that's a little, maybe a little unique, number one, but also, secondly, something that a lot of listeners can relate with and learn something from. So it's really designed to help our listeners become more educated and more, we believe with education becomes power. And so it empowers you to make better decisions as you look at your own investment and financial and retirement planning decisions. So today, and by the way, I also want to just a little disclosure, the kind of experience that the particular client that we're going to discuss had may be different than the experience you have.
But we pick these on purpose because we think they represent situations that many people see they come to see us. And we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of first-time appointments in our firm with people that have an existing advisor or they've never visited with an advisor before and they're in this retirement, what we like to call retirement transition process. And people will normally come to us within 3 to 5 years of retiring to see if they're able to retire, or they'll come in when they're just retired or soon after they retire. But that's why we pick these particular stories out of the hundreds of people we see.
That's right. And today we've got Pat Henry joining us. And Pat Henry is a certified financial planner, almost 30 years of experience in the industry. He joined Hanson McLean in 2004, and he works with most of his clients are in the Sacramento, California office. Pat's also very involved with and board of directors with Okaizu. It's a nonprofit that supports families affected by childhood cancers.
And I believe he's club champion at the golf course.
And he's a scratch golfer, too. Yes. And he works.
He says he works. I don't know how you have a handicap like that when you work.
Anyway, Pat, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good morning. Yeah, Pat, if you saw me play golf this last weekend, you would think that I was working 24/7.
Oh, good.
And we know that's not true.
So the client that you're we're discussing here, what retirement stage were they in? Are they still working towards retirement? What was the?
Well, it was interesting because the husband of the group of the couple had just been laid off from a big tech company, and his wife was still working. They were both kind of in their early 60s. And they were friends of some existing clients, so they came in and just wanted to talk about what retirement might look like for them. They really didn't think they could retire until 70. He was planning on going back to work. She was planning on working. She's a little younger, so she was planning on working until about 66.
And how old were they when they came in?
Early 60s, 61 and 63.
Okay.
And so he's 63, she's 61. And we went through our entire process because they really had no idea. And they are like a lot of our clients, and almost kind of similar into what Paula was talking about, in that they had been good savers. They'd saved a lot of money, but it was scattered all over the place. When we started looking at it, they had close to 20 different accounts that they had collected over these years. They had old 401ks, they had IRAs, they had individual stock accounts from companies. In the tech industry, you get a lot of stock options and things, and he had old stock accounts that he held either direct or through a company.
I'd be afraid of losing one if I had 17, keeping track of them all.
Oh, I know. It was incredible. You've just seen the box. It was a box of files and papers that they brought in.
It's not atypical. It's not atypical.
No.
It's not atypical.
Even in the tech industry, brought in a box of papers. Yeah. Here's my accounts.
I remember a lady came in once years ago with a box, and she said, I don't know what this stuff is. And there were stock certificates, and they were held at companies. And I said, this is I added it up. It was $110,000. She said, I don't know what this is.
I'm going to Disneyland.
It was amazing because after going through our process, we found out that they were pretty moderate, conservative investors, and their investment objective wasn't even close to how the assets were invested. And we started going through it, and it ended up being about $2.3 million worth of saved assets.
And really?
They didn't know what they had?
They didn't know.
They kind of knew. I mean, they knew they had money, especially in some of the old 401ks. but they really didn't think they could retire. That was the thing, is they really truly believed they couldn't retire. So after going through this process, we were able to create a strategy that allowed him to retire today. In fact, he's not going back to work. He is retired. She is retiring in June of this year. We created a strategy. We reduced the 17 different accounts down to 5, brought them all in, and now we have the IRA. All the before-tax or qualified accounts, IRAs and Roth IRAs, are in line with their investment objectives. The after-tax stuff, we're in the process of kind of slowly converting that into more of a moderate conservative strategy, because it was pretty much all in stocks.
And Pat, so tell the listeners why you wouldn't do that just in a single foul swoop, why you wouldn't just convert everything into the appropriate portfolio on the taxable accounts.
Yeah, because when we started looking at it and we were doing some analysis on it, we found that a lot of these things he had picked up and she had picked up earlier in their career, so they had a very low cost basis in them. And if we just flipped the whole thing into what their strategy would be, we probably would create a couple $100,000 in capital gain exposure that they're going to have to pay taxes on. So we started moving some of the cash positions and some of the other stocks that didn't have as big a gain. And we've got a strategy set up that over probably the next 3 years we'll get this in line with their investment objectives, but it's going to take a little time.
Any debt?
No, their house is paid for.
Good savers then.
For and they have no date. Oh yeah, fantastic savers.
How about social? What's the strategy on social security? Because we just had these social security workshops, and they're very, very, very well attended. The ones that we do throughout the year, and people walk away from the workshops on the social security and said, "I never even thought that I should either defer or take, or one or the other, for depending on the couple." What was the strategy on the Social Security with this particular couple?
So with this couple, they're really not dependent on Social Security. With her pension and the money that they have put away, they have plenty of money to fund their retirement goals and what they need. So my recommendation to them was take Social Security as early as possible. Use it. They could use it for whatever, or they could turn around and reinvest it. Life expectancy or longevity on his side of the family is relatively short. His parents passed away before they were 80. So we looked at them starting Social Security immediately for him. She's not eligible yet. And starting it now. So he's already applied for it.
So some of the listeners are saying, why would you start Social Security immediately if, in fact, they didn't need the money? Why wouldn't they just defer? Do you want to address that, Pat, or would you like me?
Oh, no, that's fine. So when you look at it, if you start early, or there's a couple reasons, and you don't want to look at Social Security kind of in a bubble. There's a lot of things that people come in and talk about Social Security, and they're accurate, but it might be true for their situation. So in his case, his longevity in his family is not that long. The break-even point, if you start early or you wait to full retirement age, is usually somewhere around 80. He said he's probably not going to live past 80. And since they're not dependent on the income, if they were dependent on the income, let me take a step back here, we'd want to push that off as long as possible to get the highest amount possible. But since they're not dependent on it, they can take that money. In fact, they have big travel plans now that they are going to retire, and they can use some of that to do some things that they wouldn't do in the past, fly first class, stay in 5-star hotels. They can do some things now and enjoy that money since they're not dependent on it.
So there's two things for the rest of the listeners. One, when you're making the Social Security decision, as Pat was helping these clients make this Social Security decision, which is you have to honestly look at your life expectancy as objectively as possible. The shorter the life expectancy, the more the better it is for you to take the benefit early if you're not working. The second thing is legislative risk for Social Security. So there's constant talk in the halls of Congress about either taxing Social Security higher or actually limiting the benefit based upon your income.
Now, here at Hanson McLean, obviously we don't have a crystal ball, but I was listening to a radio program a couple weeks ago, I think it was on NPR, one of those, and they were talking about the Social Security Trust Fund going broke by the year 2030, and without a fix, there'd be an automatically 25% cut across the board. This is what was stated at this time. As soon as we're in a deficit, automatic 25%. So So that's when the gun is, right? 2030. So my guess is we're probably still going to come a few more years without anything's going to. But eventually, Congress has to act. Otherwise, and legislation, the rules in place are going to act.
And who are they going to take the benefit away from? The people that don't need it. The people that aren't reliant upon the income for room and board, shelter and food. That's who the money's going to come from. So if your income is over $100 or $150 or $200,000 a year in retirement, and you worry about legislative risk, if you think that Social Security is going to actually change and that they're going to actually start taking benefits away, who do you take them away from? People that have them. So, Pat, brilliant, brilliant planning right there, right? Start it early. Get that money while you can because you might not get it forever. Shorten life expectancy. Make the accounts actually work for them. And do they appear that they're going to spend these dollars? They didn't think they were going to be able to retire. Not only are they going to retire now, but you said now they're actually taking trips and enjoying.
Oh, they're already planning things. Yeah, they're heading to New Zealand this summer.
Good for you. Retired. Good for them. Yeah, good for them. They sound like and referred from existing clients.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, Pat, as always, thank you for being a part of Hanson McLean. Yeah. I know you've been here for a long, long time. We're really glad to hear that you are starting to play less golf and not quite so good. It tells us that you're actually.
Yes, I've been here a long time. Yeah. I appreciate the big parking lot.
appreciated it. And, you know, so the experience that Pat Henry talked about, there are a lot of people getting close to retirement that aren't sure. So we talk about this at Hanson McLean. We often talk about half us are forced into retirement before we realize it. That's
perfect
what this
example.
Was. 63 gets downsized.
Thinks he's going to work till he's 70.
Maybe it's best. It might have been helpful to go through this process prior to that, little less anxiety. We strongly encourage folks. Look, if you're 3 years away from retirement age, meet with a financial advisor. Meet with a Hanson McLean advisor and have them go through a similar process. Maybe you're in great shape. Maybe you need to do some more tweaking. But, I tell you, it'll be to your benefit by doing so. We are out of time, unfortunately. It's been a pleasure being with you again. If you haven't been to Hanson McLean, our website, in a while, we encourage you to go. There's great stuff there. You can also subscribe to our podcast while you're there. Thanks for being part of today's program. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.